Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed, and we are in mid-October, and I don't know about you guys, I love this time of year. I don't know what it is, whether it's the chilly temperatures that begin, and we get to wear like flannels and hats and boots and all that kind of manly stuff, you know, it's just, and for me, of course, hunting, I love being in the woods. As a matter of fact, if you remember, maybe 3 weeks ago now, 4 weeks ago, we had Don Higgins on here from the Chasing Giants podcast. And Don has taken a lot of monster bucks, a lot of guys. He's one of the foremost experts, you know, on white-tailed deer, you know, activity hunting, all that stuff. And I did a men's retreat for him 2 weeks ago, just this past weekend. It was the very last weekend of September. And I was having a conversation with him. You know, he always has a target buck. You know, he's got his cameras up and he's trying to figure out, you know, where some of the good bucks. And, you know, obviously these aren't high fence stuff. Don does his homework, I mean, year round. And he really studies where the deer are moving. And anyhow, we had gone to dinner and he keeps things pretty quiet. And I said, man, you know, do you have any great target bucks? He goes, I do, but I'm kind of keeping it, you know, quiet because I don't want somebody else, you know, stepping on my toes. And I get it. You don't want someone in and coming in and taking something you've worked really hard for. But he showed me a picture of this one deer, and he had named it. And now it's public knowledge, so I can talk about this, but it was called Zacchaeus. And remember that, you know, Zacchaeus climbed up into a sycamore tree trying to see Jesus. And I'm not going to say anything more about the tree climbing up into a tree and the story behind it, because I don't even know the full story yet. But if you watch the Chasing Giants podcast, which has been great to us here, they've really promoted, you know, what we do over here. Thank you, guys. He's going to tell the story. And I think it's going to be in November they're going to show that video. So you're going to want to pull that up. Eric, do we have a picture of this buck, Zacchaeus? I think I brought a couple pictures in.
We do. Here we go.
Now watch this. I'm looking up here because look at that. What? And get this. This buck scored over 190 inches, which for most of us will never have a buck that size. This is his fifth largest buck. Fifth. Wow. You know, I think I'd quit. If I shot something like that, I knew I'd never get anything bigger. No, I wouldn't quit because I just love it too much.
Yeah, look at the rack on that thing.
I know. Look at the inside spread on that thing. And it's got those forkies off the brow tines. I mean, I haven't even counted the points on it. It's crazy. It's got to be somewhere like 15 points or something. But, you know, he's so humble. He really is. And, you know, in Chasing Giants, what I love that they do is they really talk about how they track deer year round to understand their movements and pass that wisdom on, you know, to the rest of us. So, yeah, tomorrow morning I'm headed down to my place where I hunt in southern Indiana. It's right off Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, where it all kind of comes together. It's an amazing place. Hills are steep, and they're going to kick my butt. But it's a great place. I haven't had a chance to get out yet this year. I've been speaking and traveling. It's going to be so good to go sit in a tree. That's where I get my head clear. This past week was my our wedding anniversary. Stacy and I celebrated our wedding anniversary. And we went down to a place called Brown County in more southern Indiana. We had a cabin. It was awesome. But, Eric, do you guys, you're down towards Carmel, down towards Indianapolis, right?
Right.
Do you and your wife, when you get away, like, for celebrations, like an anniversary, do you go to, like, Brown County, or is that too close to home, or where do you guys go?
Oh, we seem to end up in Tennessee or Chicago. I know those are two.
You don't go to a Buc-ee's for that. For your anniversary.
Now, we did stop at Buc-ee's last time. I got some shirt. I got a shirt and some jerky.
Yeah. You know what's so funny? My stepdaughter was just down there and she got to go to one of those places. She's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this.
Have you ever never been to a Buc-ee's?
I've still never been to a Buc-ee's.
Oh, dude.
I know. I may just have to make an anniversary trip next year just for that.
Hey, so for any of you guys that have been to a Buc-ee's, put your picture up and tag Brent in it.
Yeah.
Start rubbing it in.
I don't think I'll take her to a Buc-ee's for our anniversary. We'll just have to make a special. You know, have you heard that phrase, happy wife, happy life?
You know, I have. And before I was married, I thought it was really annoying. Yeah. And then you realize that women, they can make your life miserable.
Yeah, it's very true. And here's the thing, guys. If you're like a hunter like I am, and you study year-round what these deer are doing, and you're going down, you know, before the season and making sure your straps are all good on your stands, and when the season gets in here, you kind of before, a couple weeks before you're going to be hunting them, get in there and make some mock scrapes and, you know, all that stuff. You plan it out. Like, tomorrow, I can tell you what the wind direction is going to be where I'm hunting. It's going to be north wind tomorrow night. It's going to be 15-mile-an-hour winds with 29-mile-an-hour gusts. I know that. I've studied this. The next morning, it's going to be 7 mile an hour, and it's coming out of the northwest. So it's funny how we really study these things, and my wife will say, you know, I wish you could pursue me like you will whitetails. And there is a lot of truth to that. So, guys, word of wisdom there. Happy wife, happy life. Make sure you're treating your wife right, especially, not to manipulate, but especially before the hunting season. Because what it can get like, whew. I'm like, that's all I can think about right now is getting down there and thinking about if they come from this direction, how am I going to turn? It's crazy. I know. But we went down to Brown County. I was telling you, we went down there and there's a place we love to get pizza. It's called Big Woods Pizza. They're just amazing pizza down in Brown County in Nashville, Indiana. So you know how a few weeks ago I was talking about these breadcrumbs that God will put out for us, like with our purpose, like we can learn to follow them. I know in the episode where I talked about that bear that I ended up having to shoot, God changed my path 3 times and he kept showing me to go a different way. And I didn't understand why at the time. Well, I call it the God nod. You know, when God starts doing these things, he says, yeah, that really is me. He kind of puts these breadcrumbs out. So Stacy and I are going down to Brown County, Nashville, Indiana. And so we go a night early and we stay at this like big outlet mall area where they've got every brand, you know, even my new hat, my Under Armour hat, they have one of those stores there. But again, happy wife, happy life. I knew she would want to go shopping before we get out in the woods away from everything at this beautiful cabin. So we're walking around and we're, I don't know, hour and 20 minutes away from home. And we walk in the store and she starts screaming like fun, you know, and this other woman is too. And they come running over and they hug each other. Well, it's her supervisor from work down there. And her supervisor looks at Stacy and she goes, oh my gosh, you guys are going down to Nashville, Indiana. There is this store, like they're like houses that they make into stores. She goes, you have got to go in the Stacy. It has your name, the way you decorate, written all over it. So on the way to Nashville, Indiana, she's like, do you remember the name of this place? And I said, I don't. I think she said it was like, a lot of people don't find it because it's like almost as you're going out of town, it's like the last store as you head out of town. And so we get out, you know, we are walking around. And I said, let's go that direction. So we're walking up this hill before the last shop goes out of town. And I look at this and I go, I think that was it. She goes, yo, I think that's the name of the store. So we go in. Now, I told you in one of my early episodes how God changed my path 3 times. He spoke to me and I followed what he said. We walk in this store and it looks the way my wife's an amazing interior decorator. I mean, just what she should have done. She's amazing. And everything in there looks exactly like how she would have done it. So it made sense. This other woman said, this place is screaming your name, Stacy. But as we go in, you know how like guys, when you go shopping with your wife and it's like a long day of shopping, you either kind of sit outside on the bench, you know, or if you're with them, you stay present so they can show you everything. And you're like, yeah, that's pretty. I like that. I don't like that, whatever. And we walk in this building or this house with all this stuff, women's clothing mostly. And I can't explain how, because I don't usually leave her side. Like when we're shopping, I want to stay with her. I turned to the right and started walking through this house. And it went down like a level, then I went down to another level, and I went straight to this one room. I bypassed everything in the store. Couldn't tell you why. But I get down in there, and I had this feeling come over me. It was crazy. There's men's incredible flannel shirts and stressed leather, you know, leather-bound books, all this manly stuff. And I went, hey, this is kind of like a man cave. I'm loving this in here. So if she can shop out there, I'll be in here. But I start looking at these leather-bound books. And they're men's devotionals for those who have served in the military, just you name it, you know, devotionals for couples, you know, that the husband can lead with the wife. And I went, wow, this store is different than a lot of the stores I've been in. And I started listening to the music and they were playing this, you know, kind of contemporary Christian music. And I thought, wow, my ministry, the way that I do things, you know, we go like, a lot of the times on this episode, we'll go from, you know, someplace in the wilds and bring it back to the home front with some crazy outdoor story. I see these two women that were like looking at price tag. They work there. And I walked up and I said, hey, I said, who does your decorating here? This is just like my wife. And she says, well, I do. And I said, it's amazing. She goes, thank you. And I said, who owns this? She says, well, I do. And I said, I was just in this little room down here. And I said, it's like, I've never felt something down here in Brown County where it just felt like almost like a war room, you know, in a spiritual sense. And she said, you know, I tried to create it that way because we want to have a ministry to the people that are coming down here. And I said, well, you succeeded. I said, that room is amazing. So she starts saying, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I love to speak to men. I do it through the outdoors, and I bring out everything back to the home front where men live. And she says, well, would I know anything of yours? And I said, well, here's a podcast. And I gave her a card for where the podcast, they can find it, like you're listening to it right now. And I said, I've got some books out. And I said, you know, this book would actually fit really well. She looks it up. She goes, you know what? I think we're going to order those and start carrying them in the store here. And I also had a t-shirt, and it's the one that sometimes you see, I've got, it says, when you sit with warriors, the conversation is different. She goes, that would actually fit well in this store too. And I said, well, love to have it. But it was, again, one of those little breadcrumbs that never would have happened had Stacy not run into this supervisor of hers who told us to go there, and then God led me right to that room. Because normally I'd have just stayed with Stacy and I wouldn't have even gone in there. But the thing about that room, what was so amazing is when I went in there, I just kind of felt this, what do I want to call it, like a warrior-esque. Is that even a word? Eric, is that a word, warrior-esque? It is now.
Yeah, I'll look that up and get back to you.
See if I can own that. Warrior-esque. It felt warrior-esque. But it was like this man cave, and you go in there, and you kind of feel like just overwhelmed with the power that God made and put inside of man. So we get home, and I go to Starbucks, and I'm working again, coffee shop. I'm not going there to drink fluffy coffee. I'm going in there to kind of get away from everybody so I can sit by this one window and I can work. There's something about being in an environment where there's people, you know, they're not talking really loud, but the smells were really nice, and I'm sitting there and I'm working. And I've told you guys before, I'm working on this new book, and it's called The Purpose Funnel. But I'm trying to find some ways, because what I want to talk about is, you know, when men are looking for their purpose and discovering it, a lot of times guys will ask me, well, does your purpose change? You know, as from when you're young to when you're older. And I want to kind of address that. Maybe I'll just say it like this. The purpose that God knows he has for you isn't changing. He has a path, and he's directing you on it. But you don't always know what the path is going to look like in the next 10 years or the next 10 years. You know, as chapters begin to turn, it really is like a snow melt off the top of a mountain, which becomes streams, which pours into ponds, which goes into other streams, which goes into lakes, which goes into, you know, mighty rivers and ends up out in the ocean. It's this unstoppable force. So God has a way of shaping us. And like with me, with all the outdoor stuff that I do, people say, how do you work that into your ministry? I mean, like you're out, you know, hunting an animal. And I say, no, I really don't talk about the kill. I don't enjoy the kill. I really, frankly, I don't. It's the hardest part of it. We enjoy the meat for the rest of the year, and friends that we give meat to really love it as well. But there is something that I can be honest with you about. When I'm out there, and I'm dressed for the hunt, so to speak, and I've done all the homework, you know, I know where the deer trails are, making sure I'm not stepping on them. I know what the wind direction is going to be, so my entrance and exit to the stand is going to not alarm deer. I'm making sure that I've got rubber gloves on if I'm going in. I guess if I happen to touch a branch, I don't want my scent being on there, or on the ladder rungs when I'm going up. There's just so many things that I have done, and there's something in me that just comes alive. When I'm in the wilderness, you know, when God created Adam and Eve, you know, Eve was created in the lush beauty of the garden, but Adam was created in the wilderness. You know, is there some thing, you know, that being created in the wilderness that still resonates with inside of men? I know not all men, you know, really love to hunt, but I can tell you all men love adventure. And their adventures might look different, but at the core of a man, he needs that. So in this book, as I'm working on it, it's going to be for men and women, but the section I was working on was for men. And so what I wanted to kind of take us through here in the next few minutes, I created five stages, because I said I felt warrior-esque. I felt like a warrior in that room. And that's the way I feel like when I'm out hunting, or that's the way I feel, frankly, when I'm speaking to a men's retreat or a wild game dinner, because I am bringing, it's like the sword of the spirit kind of a thing. I'm bringing in the word of God, and I get to watch how that changes men's lives, and how they'll come to me and write to me. I get them almost every day. Men going, you know, I listen to the podcast. You encourage me so much. Or when I'm doing coaching with men, you know, by the time we get done, they're going, man, I needed that this week. And I'll ask them the following week, hey, how did you feel when we ended that last session? Like, I feel empowered. Well, That's what I hope today kind of brings you a little bit. So let's look at this. So I wrote these five stages of a warrior down. And they kind of go through phases of life. So the way I'm going to talk about these is like from this age to this age, you're this. The next part, you know, this age to this age, you change and begin to morph into this part of the warrior. But the first one goes from about ages 3 to 12, about the time you have your first memories, and it's the beloved warrior. And so with the beloved, I'm going to read some of this because I can't remember all this. I literally just finished some of this up this morning. But with the beloved warrior, again, you're a very young boy, about 3 to 12. And at that part, he's desiring, you know, his parents' attention, right? Daddy, watch how fast I can run. Daddy, watch me hit this ball. Daddy, look at how high I can jump, right? The beloved warrior. He's still the boy at home, but he's wanting to get the attention of his mom and dad. You know, especially his dad, too, because like I've said, what a child almost always knows about God comes through their earthly father. So in these formative years, that's really important, Dad, for us to really plug into our kids. You know, this is the age when that child, you know, he dreams of becoming a superhero, you know, like Superman or Batman. I spent about a third of my first grade year in the hospital sick, and I was there over Halloween. And I can remember one of my first memories is they brought me a Batman costume that I ran up and down the hallways with. I loved Batman. I wanted to be Batman. This is the age where a boy learns how to ride a bike, right? He learns how to play. When you learn that, I mean, a whole new world opens up when you can learn to ride a bike. He learns how to play catch. You know, he might land his first fish. For me, it was getting my first BB gun. I mean, that was a big deal for me. You know, I say all the time, a little boy wants to know he's dangerous, someone to be reckoned with. And that BB gun is, that was it. That filled the bill for me. You know, at that age, you're building forts in the woods. You know, we named ours Chippewa, our very first one. I'll never forget it. And maybe now, this generation, you're playing video games with your friends. But the thing is, at about this age, as you start approaching that 12 years of age, you begin stopping, kind of playing with those childhood toys. Because you're moving from that beloved warrior to the next phase, is which I call the young warrior. And the young warrior is probably, and again, these kind of overlap, the years overlap a little bit, but probably around the ages of 13 to 20. You know, the boy, the beloved warrior, you know, the little boy no longer wants to be a fictitious hero. He's getting too old for that, right? He's not playing with G.I. Joes anymore. He wants to be a real hero. And so he begins to get competitive in sports. He'll show off to the girls, you know, to get their attention. At this point, he's trading in the bicycle for a dirt bike. I know that was one of my things. You know, he's learning how to hunt and fish. It's not just you got a little Zebco 33 or whatever it was, reel that you catch your first little tiny bluegill on and that your dad takes the hook out. You know, now you're wanting, you know, some spin casters. You want some other things and you want to catch a muskie, right? I can't settle for a little panfish. It's got to be big. Things are beginning to change because, again, a little boy wants to know that he is dangerous for good. And now that young warrior, he's ready to fulfill that part of his life. He's learning how to defend himself. You know, I've talked on here before about my son Garrett when he got into his very first little thing where he had to defend, actually was his friend, and how he did it. But he wants to know that he can do that. And this is the time to kind of spread your wings. You might be getting into the martial arts. You might be getting into boxing or wrestling. He learns how to begin to treat a woman. He's paying attention, you know, how to open car doors, hopefully. I hope you guys are listening to that. To shake hands when you meet, if you have your first girlfriend and you meet their dad, look them in the eye, you know, shake their hand. Very nice to meet you. It's just like we don't get taught that stuff much anymore. And we got to bring that stuff back. Maybe he changes his first tire. He learns how to change the oil. And you know, this is about the age too, where he begins to test his skills against his father's skills. It's kind of like, you know, like the young buck versus the old buck. He's kind of putting himself up against his dad to kind of see how he compares. And I still think a lot of that is he wants his dad to look at him and say, well done. You know, I'm proud of you. Those are big things. And man, when I talk to so many guys, if their dad didn't tell them that or never said the words, I love you, those men struggle with that into adult life and probably the rest of their life. It is so important to be able to say those things. But later, maybe in this stage, you know, when you're getting closer now to about the age of 20, you know, the young buck will either go off to college. He might be joining the military. Maybe he begins to learn a trade. I know that's what I did. I was working in the steel mill about that time after high school and trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. Again, purpose now is beginning to something that we are seeking. We're trying to figure out what it is that we're good at, what we're supposed to do. You know, I think another thing for me at that age, 16 was a big deal. You know, at 16, I was able to drive a car. I had a driver's license. And the other thing about 16 was, you know, when you were 12, up until you turned 16, you had to have someone 18 years of age, this is Pennsylvania, 18 years of age or older, a licensed hunter, to go with you, had to stand with you. You couldn't, you know, leave them alone. But at the age of 16, I was allowed to hunt by myself. And we lived on the side of a mountain, and there was no houses behind us. And I remember when I finally was 16, it wasn't just being able to drive a car. I grabbed my .30-06, I got all my stuff on, and I made my way to the top of that mountain where there was a ridge that I had scouted, and I knew these deer would move from the bottoms up to their bedding area. And that became a really pivotal moment in my life. I can remember understanding the wind for the first time and how to be not, you know, upwind or downwind, and how to make sure I knew which side of the trail that I needed to be on. And the first morning that I didn't get busted and I had 9 deer walk past me at 15 yards, that was like a rite of passage for me because I did it. You know, it was really, and my dad, if he went hunting, we'd never see anything because he used to put on Old Spice before we'd go into the woods. I think I've told you that story before. But it was a big deal. I got to shoot my first deer during these years and learn how to gut out a deer. And anyhow, it's just a really great time. So the next phase, now we're kind of moving. We were in the young warrior, but now about 21 to 35, I call this the mighty warrior. And physically, you're probably about as good as you're going to get in about these years. You know, the strongest, the fastest, everything is connecting the dots. Your wisdom, everything you have is very quick. And this time in life, you know, you've been out of school for a bit, you know, and you're trying to figure out, you know, where you belong. You know, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to be in college? Am I supposed to be working this job or that job? Or, you know, this is another time where, you know, many of the friendships that you had during high school, you don't see those guys anymore because they're all kind of like a bachelor group of bucks, right? They kind of break off and they're going their own way. This is a time when belief systems are really being formed by about the age of probably 25. You know, you really are discovering what you believe about God, what you believe about politics, how you're going to live your life, you know, what kind of, you know, morals, perspectives you're going to see through what lens, so you know how you're going to live your life. And this is another neat thing. You know, this is the age where you probably are going to find a wife and have children. But the other thing is, this is a time when you were almost like an armor bearer in the last phase. You know, the armor bearer, if you can remember from biblical times, was someone that maybe carried the sword and the shield or the club or whatever it was for the warrior who was out there doing battle. So this is a time when you were learning those type of things when you were the young warrior. But as you're moving into the mighty warrior, you're now kind of not just carrying those for someone else. You're now wielding the sword because you've been being taught how to do that. And this is a time for you to begin to test it and try it and get out there. You know, he's actively engaging in battles at this point. You know, he's been training for these for a long time. And again, we're physically mature, you know, physically and mentally, and we're finding our place on the front line. And I think that's one of the biggest questions is, where am I supposed to be? You know, we want to give our lives to something bigger than ourselves. That's what we want to be involved in. We're just not sure what it is yet. And this is a time when we really do discover what we are good at, what other people look at and say, you are really talented at this. I think at this point, too, we're really seeking God because we're looking for his will. You think about the seeking and chasing phase, you know, during in the rut, you know, when the bucks are seeking out the does. I think for me, some of those years sitting in a tree stand was seeking God. God, what do you, those were the questions I had when I was sitting out during these years. Who am I really? God, what do you have planned for me? What am I supposed to do now with the rest of my life? I'd be like, God, just show me and I'll do it. I just need to know what it is. So during these years, I was busy studying. I was in college. You know, I was traveling the world in music. Kind of funny thing. I just noticed that, Stephen Curtis Chapman and Mary Beth, his wife, had their wedding anniversary. I think was it today or yesterday? And I was in Steve's wedding because we traveled back then. And I was just thinking about my wife and I getting away and some of the funny story. I got to say this real quick. So I told you about my wife and I getting away this last weekend for our wedding anniversary. And in front of our cabin, there's this lake. It like looks like glass, perfectly still, no wind. The reflection of the leaves was incredible. There's no cars anywhere around. So we take a hike down to this lake, and there's a rowboat. And my wife loves like movies like The Notebook, right? And so I'm thinking, I got to create a moment like this. Happy wife, happy life. And so she's like, hey, there's a rowboat. I said, well, let's go out in it. So I slide this thing down in. I get her all the way in the back of the boat. And I take the oars, and I get them in, and I'm putting the oars in, and I'm getting ready to start rowing out. And I begin to go out. And she's like, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. I go, what? She goes, there's water pouring into the boat. I go, oh, it's probably just rainwater. And she goes, no. And I look, it's coming in. I have to get us back to shore as fast as I can. Someone who would use it last time left the drain plug. Like if you get rain in it, you got to flip it over and take the plug or whatever. So that was the end of that. I screwed that up. Anyhow, I tried. But it's during those years, again, where you become like the lover too, with your wife, with your children. Things begin to look different at this age. You begin to look at God with this awe and wonder, especially when I'm sitting in a tree stand and I'm watching in the mornings, everything begin to come to life. You know, whether it's turkeys beginning to talk on the roost, whether I hear a squirrel begin to kind of bark because he saw something he's uncomfortable with, and I hear him coming down the tree, you know, that first flick of an ear of a whitetail as it's moving through the thick brush. All these things I begin to look and go, God, you have to exist. You know, what's amazing to me is when people say they don't believe in God, and I say, well, science has yet to prove that nothing can come, something can come from nothing, right? Go try to figure that theology out. Yeah, as far as I know, there isn't anything that came from nothing. But this is the age you're kind of figuring that out. You know, I went to Alaska. I worked on a commercial fishing boat during these years. I was spreading my wings. I was trying this bigger than stuff that I was able to do when I was a teenager, still under mom and dad's, you know, their house. But this is a time when we are really honing all of those skills. We're more adventurous. We're willing to take risks. And we really begin to develop as the mighty warrior. Well, the next phase that we have is about the age of probably around 36 to about 65. And that's what I call the ruling warrior. And the ruling warrior, you know, this man has now lived, you know, enough life to understand, you know, how to rule others well, not in a domineering way. I don't mean it that way, but how to effectively lead others, you know, under his leadership, under his command, whether he's in the military or he's a boss or CEO of a company. You know, the ruling warriors, they have become CEOs, you know, managers, maybe lead pastors or, you know, maybe seasoned politicians, you know, maybe even president. No, thank you. But this is a time of like wealth building, both financially and relationally. You've really worked on those relationships because the perspective you are now getting is you begin to understand and appreciate how important relationships truly are. And you begin to work on them and you begin to invest in those things because those are the friendships you're really going to have the rest of your life, the ones you're developing now. You know, during those years for me, I think it was two albums, I think of my own. I was trying to leave my mark, you know, in this world. And I toured with a lot of different Christian artists during the years. I became an ordained pastor, you know, during these years. Again, that's that ruling part where I was becoming basically, I don't know if like ruling is domineering, managing well, leading. Let's go with that. That sounds better. You know, I stepped away from that after about 5 years because God called me into going into full-time men's ministry. This is still the season of risk-taking. But the risks that you're taking at this age, when you're around that 36 to 65 years of age, that's where a lot of guys go, man, I'm not sure because if I leave this, will I ever find a job as good as I had before? And I think with that, you kind of have to look at it and say, do you have joy? Do you have peace where you're at? Because if you stay in this role the rest of your life and you don't have joy or peace and you feel like you're in the wrong place, you got to look at that. Again, go back to what am I really good at? What do others say I'm good at? Where is God? Do I feel God moving? Where do I see those breadcrumbs that he's laying out for me? You know, after I left, I went into full-time speaking. That's what I do now. I learned I love to communicate with guys. I love to see the light bulbs go on, you know, when they hear something that moves them. And it doesn't matter whether it's the, you know, the voice of truth, you know, that I'm speaking to, God's stories in my life or scripture, or whether it's, you know, working with some of the outdoor companies that I do to be able to bring a message to educate other hunters how to be more effective. Because honestly, we know the better you are, the more you actually really enjoy it, and the more you're going to be able to teach young kids, which is so important. You know, I began to work with some of the best whitetail hunters, you know, around this time in my life, and I was still learning. And that's the thing, guys. If you're not still learning and growing, you're dying. Until the day you die, we are still created to learn and to grow because there's always something new. So let me just kind of challenge you with that. But so after you've kind of moved through, you know, this phase of the ruling warrior, we kind of move into the last phase, kind of so to speak. And I call it the wise warrior. And again, these ages can overlap a little bit, but this I'm kind of maybe saying maybe 66 on, you know, the rest of your life. And I made some notes and I said, the wise warrior has now become the master. You know, he's gained a lifetime of wisdom that can now be shared with all the warrior phases. And if utilized, and that's the key thing, he's got to still see that he has a purpose and then engage. But he's got this lifetime of wisdom that he can share, and he's got to be able to especially support those that are now on the front lines, maybe going back to like the warrior phase, the mighty warrior phase. He's got to be a support for them because they're going to have a lot of questions. They're going to have a lot of battles. They're going to win a lot they're going to lose, and you have to be able to help them move forward to know how to become better at what they're doing. Discipleship. That becomes, and I know that I'm almost to that. I just turned 64 2 days ago. Unless you're dyslexic, and I'm only what, 46? I kind of like that. But discipleship is becoming more important to me. You know, I can go out and I can be leading these men's retreats and teaching them how to renew their mind and find their purpose and all these things. But if I don't start training other guys how to do that same thing that I'm doing, it's lost. And that's why I'm writing this new book I'm working on called The Purpose Funnel, because I want others to know how to find their purpose and how to be able to move it forward and then be able to help others do the exact same thing. But in this phase, the wise warrior, discipleship really does really become important. And I know it's only going to grow more as God continues to expand my influence. I never would have guessed at 64. I was at 63, I think it was, when I started this podcast, or maybe I was just ending 62, right before I turned 62. Man, as a kid, you're thinking, well, gosh, that's like end of life stuff, right? Well, I mean, it could be, or it could be another 40 years. You have no idea what God has in store. Paul, to live is Christ, but to die is gain. I'm going to keep living my life until he calls me home. This passion you hear, why am I like this? Because it's what God created me to do. Find that in your life. And you will feel the exact same way every day when you get up. It's an amazing thing. You know, as I was writing this morning, I had a call from my buddy Roger. And Roger's been on this podcast before. You know, he was in Desert Storm, Desert Shield. Roger's had a lot of experiences. You know, some unfortunate, you know, on the battlefield. You know, he's lost friends. I can't imagine. And again, to those of you who have served, thank you, sincerely. Much respect. But as we were talking, I messaged him this thing with the warrior phases. And I said, man, what do you think? I'm kind of putting these things together. This is kind of how I came up with it. And we came back and forth a little bit. You know, I think maybe that phase should be this and that. And when we were done with it, I just said to him, I said something like, man, I messaged you all these things because I trust you. And there was a pause. And he came back and he said, man, I'm so honored that you would say that to me. He says, because I feel the same way about you. And I just came back with one text. It said, iron sharpens iron. I don't know where you are and what warrior phase you're in right now. But I do know this. God does have this incredible plan for your life. And I want you to remember something as I wrap it up. You know, is it Exodus 15:3, where it says, the Lord is a warrior. The warrior is his name. You are a warrior. Never, ever believe that you're not. When you have the God of the universe in your spirit, because you invited him in the moment you truly believed, you were forgiven of your sins, and God filled you with his promised Holy Spirit, It's like your heart's become a man cave, like the one I was talking about earlier. It's the place that when you learn to live out of that place, the enemy runs for cover because he knows what's coming. So as I kind of wrap this up, I want to come back and I want to encourage you to be the warrior that God has called you to be in every single phase that we just talked about, because you have what it takes, but you have to learn how to trust in the one who gave you all the weapons you will ever need in this lifetime to fight against evil. Remember, I always say that we are the resistance. So let's end again with what I say so many weeks, that when a man knows who he is in Christ, that he's been created in the image of the living God, when he is no longer held captive by the opinions of others or cares whether he lives or dies, that man is now extremely dangerous, dangerous for good, because he's been unleashed. We'll see you next time.